What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock on February 12th, and I am so fortunate to have back this preseason guest, Eno Saris. What a shock this is. Eno, so good to see you.
Yeah, it's a running bit that's just going to keep going with it.
It's not a bit at all. You're a wonderful recurring guest. Oh my gosh. Yeah. We've had other people. We had Lance Brzozowski on here, who was fantastic. Right. Might I add. And we have to make this an hour because Eno's getting one of his two haircuts. So we're looking forward to that. I don't know which one it's going to be. We're going to find out.
The other haircut was the long, like Kenny G thing. So I guess I could get extensions and come back.
You could.
Hey guys.
You could.
It's young Eno again.
I have one guy that it's like a $28 haircut. I go there. His name is Aziz. We don't really say much. He sees me, smiles, puts the things on, whatever that thing is.
Is it like the razor against the comb type of haircut?
Oh yeah, it's the classic stuff.
Comb, razor.
Yeah, he sometimes uses a little bit, but he's got it down. And at the end, the best part, I don't tell him this, is he always shows the mirror and he goes, "Movie star." I love him. Aziz, you're the best.
So you don't amazing. Talk a lot?
No.
Oh gosh.
He doesn't speak a lot of English as well.
Mine is like my therapist.
No. I just honestly meditate during it. It's so great. Nice. But that's not what we're going to do today, guys. Hey, we're here for NL and AL Central sleepers. If you listened to our last episode, that was AL and NL East. Now we've got the Central. We're moving on to these three different sections of divisions. Terrible stuff. It's fine. Eno, we're going to start with the AL Central. You had your top 150 starting pitchers actually come out today, and tell people a little bit more about that, because I'm going to segue into one of these teams and one of these players, which you'll see in a moment. But yeah, tell us about your rankings that came out today.
It's funny with these big products that my big stuff plus piece last week. And then this one, you know, you have a little bit of a sense of relief that you got it out, but there's actually a lot of stress day of, because of potential errors or somebody who's upset about something in it, or like, just, you know, you're getting the feedback back, you're reading the comments, which you shouldn't, but you do. And Drew Rasmussen fell between the cracks. I'm getting in there. You know that one of the difficult things is actually just getting all the pitchers in there.
Like, I know.
Because you'll look at different depth charts, different projections. I'm pulling together data. I'm putting together like six different data sets for this, because I use the BP Arsenal metrics. I used stuff. Every time you're pulling things from thing to thing, you think, oh, I'm going to catch it. There'll be an NA, and I'll be like, why?
Right.
What, you know? And I reverse, where I like pull from one and then I go back to the other one and pull back to see, oh, am I missing something? Mm-hmm. And I do this over and over again to try and not to catch everybody. And I still missed Alex Cobb and Drew Rasmussen.
Don't tell Alex Cobb, you know, you don't have to text him that one. It's all right. No. You'll be fine.
He'll still
with
be cool with me, hopefully. but Drew Rasmussen deserves to be in there somewhere. And, and Drew Rasmussen also represents the thing that's really the hardest about modern pitching rankings, is that, like, I think he'll be really good in maybe 90 innings.
Well, right.
And that's that's a really hard thing to manage, to know where to put him. Now I have him next to Kumar Rocker, who I was like, I think he'll be really good
to me
in 90 innings. Yeah. I have do things more like you have tiers. I think that's a great way around it, because you can be like, hey, this is the tier of really good. And I end up having tiers where I kind of oscillate between guys who are really good in smaller samples and then like Toby's types.
Right. Like, and I do this thing. It's like, okay, you're a worse Toby. You are a worse upside flyer. That's the next tier, right? That's how I do it every single week. I have Rasmussen higher. I have him aggressively because it's a 12 teamer. And if he's starting out of the gate, then great. Right. I think one of the traps I want to say about pitching rankings is about volume. And I know this is because there are different types of leagues and what volume means and what an innings projection means. For me personally, when it's a 12 teamer, well, I don't care so much about innings projections up to a certain point, right? I care about innings projections a bit in the first 20, 30 starters I go for. But then after that, when you're in a point of a draft like Drew Rasmussen, I'm not going to be drafting whoever I draft in that spot in my draft is not going to stick around on my team in all likelihood. Like, look back at your drafts from last year and the year before and see how many guys that you drafted after pick 100 overall that you actually held on to your team throughout the year, right? And it's like 40% at most or something like that. So for me, I'm like, look, if Drew Rasmussen's good out of the gate, awesome. He's starting? Sweet. I'll get as much of that value as I can and then move
pretty
on.
Pretty good, yeah.
Right? Yeah. And that's an easier decision to make. It's also something that if you're getting quality and then you know you're getting quality, there's so much value to that instead of the tentative, I don't know what I should do. I value that decision a bit more in my rankings because then it's just not like that projection straight down. And there's a lot more of those little nuances involved for me, but it's so tough.
Some of it is also like the deeper your league goes, the higher the ERA in your league is.
Yes.
So if you're in like a, you know, AL only league or whatever, then it's more valuable to get a guy who can have a 4-1 ERA in 165 innings, right?
Right. Because right.
Those innings are scarce. That 4-1 ERA is better relative to the league than in other mm-hmm. leagues. I just ran the auction calculator at Fangraphs for last year. So last year's value. And in the top 20, you have plenty of high volume guys, Wheeler, Scooble, Sale, Bryce Miller, Imanaga, Lugo, Corbin Burns, Fromber. Those guys are top 10 pitchers. But if you look at the top 20, you have as many high volume guys as you have low volume guys. Paul Steens is number 4 with 133 innings. You've got Tyler Holton gets into the top 20. Just because
those he got sneaky a couple wins.
Saves, a couple wins, yeah. You've got Ronel Blanco with 160, Hunter Green with 150, Ronaldo Lopez with 135, Brian Wu with 121, and Tyler Glasnow with 134 makes the top 20 in a 12-team league. Yeah. So
that's wild.
You know, when I ended up, you know, near the top, I have a tier of mostly Dodgers, but also DeGrom, where I kind of left behind in the top 10, 12, I have everybody's predicted for like 160 innings or more. Right?
Sure.
And I want to give you somebody who is really good and I think will be healthy. Mm-hmm. And then from like 13, like Frober is the last guy where I'm like, okay, you know, after this, it's going to get dicey. And it's Snell, DeGrom, Glasnow, Fried. It's just
yeah,
in a
right,
row.
Right.
And then there's some other guys, and then Strider and Ohtani and Sasaki. So I call it the YOLO yo-yo. I kind of go in
between. Oh, I love that.
I go in between, you know, wanting to go after that excellent stuff and then also maybe having someone who maybe not doesn't have the same upside, but is exciting and was going to give me more innings.
Well, it wouldn't be a craft episode if we didn't tangent at all here. All I'm going to say is this. I'm finding it so difficult to discern between all of these hollies. And what that means is like, okay, you're going to go over 150 innings or so with good ratios, but not like a 30% K rate. And that's really it. Like, you're going to be hovering around like 24, 25 or so.
Half of those guys are good and half of them are bad. Like, they're a coin flip.
Well, no. Who? What? How? What? Which ones are good? Which ones are bad? I don't know. That's the hard part for me. And
Tyon
it's like,
and Lugo were good last year, but.
Oh, well, fair enough. I guess
Tyon
I mean.
Lugo
like,
going to be good this year?
Well, right. That's closer to 20%. And I feel also have like a lower floor of whip and ERA and everything. Uh-huh. I mean, I'm just going to list off a lot of names here that I'm trying to like really piece together and figure out where I'm at with, like George Kirby, Max Fried, Garrett Cole. You have
to the top, yeah.
Yeah, even Justin like Steele and Schwellenbach and Bybee and Webb and Valdez. Like, how do I distinguish between them? I don't know. Bryce Miller, Brian Wu, Aaron Nola, Luis Castillo. It's like a lot of these guys are very similar. I've actually found myself pushing down Nola and Castillo because I feel what they do in a 12 teamer isn't with the same ceiling as the other ones anymore. Like
I have
Castillo
them after that high ceiling group, I have them in
right?
the sort of low 20s.
But then there are so many. I mean, right now in the way it is, this is not final, guys. I literally have Nola 36 and Castillo 37. I know I'm crazy. I know it sounds nuts. But there are just so many I have to fit in here. Where do I put Sonny Gray? Where do I put honestly, Robbie Ray, who's flirting again with a 30% strikeout rate.
Yeah.
And then there's Jared Jones, who I'm a big believer in this year. Or there's Bailey Ober. And we're going to get to that with your first team, the AL Central Twins. Your sleeper apparently is Bailey Ober, putting him at 60 or so in your top 150 rankings. What is it about Bailey Ober that you're against? Is it just the home runs?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a fact now. You know, we've got 471 innings from Bailey Ober of a 1.4 home runs per nine. That's 75th percentile in a bad way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The stuff metrics on him aren't great. He does command it really well. But I believe the stuff metrics to some extent, even though he has some really interesting characteristics for his release due to his height and everything, we now have arm slot in Stuff Plus. So,
yeah,
there's no like, oh, his arm slot is different. I don't know. That's a feature in the model. He throws 91.7 and he might throw less hard next year because he threw 91.4 the year before. So he's kind of a 90 poo guy. And what happens at 90 poo is you give up homers. So I think it's excellent command, especially high in the zone. Good pitches, but not great pitches. And I think it's a high threes.
Yeah, it could be a high threes for Bailey Ober. He'd had high threes last year, 398. It was 343 and 321 the previous 2 years. The interesting element to me is the addition of the cutter coming in last year. And I think that really helped him. However, the four-seamer location dropped a lot. This used to be Bailey Ober Rizzi, as I would call him, if you guys remember.
Yeah, he was in the zone with the four-seamer and drop everything off of, right?
Right, and so we're talking 75-79% high location on that four-seamer for Ober in 22 and 23, 62% last year.
Did you replace some of those with high cutters, I guess?
That's a great question. Those cutters were 15% high lock.
What? Oh, so yeah. He's using it more like a slider.
Well, what's happening is that Ober pulled down his four-seamer a bit and a little too far, further than I would like him to. Maybe the cutter is actually impacting that a little bit.
Cutter maybe had a 504 slugging last year, and the four-seam had a 506.
Right. So what I see here is a guy with an elite changeup. That changeup, good against both righties and lefties. I think he can continue to throw it against righties. That has had a lot of success against them. And especially like last year, it was a 28% swing strike rate in 24% usage. That was a 73% strike rate. That's just insane how good that is for a righty-righty changeup. And Bailey Ober, you get that four-seamer up a little bit more.
30%.
No, 24% usage against righties. I would push that up, honestly, because just that effective of a pitch for him. I think also the four-seamer itself should return closer to that higher location that we saw in previous years. And this is the first year with the cutter. I have high hopes that a guy with a 7.3 extension, which is absolutely elite, is able to utilize that in a way to make four seamers and cutters work inside the zone. It's not the same velocity to do that like Garrett Crochet, though I am optimistic on Ober. I mean, at the very least, the whip will be great. He doesn't walk many batters. He's generally a good hit suppressor. I don't know. I see that as a good strikeout guy with like a mid three ZRA, good whip, good situation for Ober also looking like a workhorse moving forward. But homers are homers. And boy,
if I underrate him, it's not maybe because of whip. And whip is a category, and it's not necessarily one that I have listed in my rankings when I'm looking at them.
It's also a pretty safe bet to say, hey, a guy who throws low 90s is going to do worse. It's a much smaller margin. that's generally a smart thing to do. Yeah, fade the ones throwing low 90s.
It's not all about velo.
Yeah.
When I was debating in my head, I was like, oh, this. And I was like, 91.
So, I mean, the velocity is higher, right? Because it is 7.3 extension, but still. And is also upstairs, so slower bat speed. But yeah, not fun.
An actual sleeper for me on this one is Zebby Matthews.
Oh, dang it.
Yeah.
How dare you?
I just see him. He has like the widest arsenal of good pitches. I think of the group that Semyon Woods-Richardson, David Festa, You know, kind of the back end of, you know, Chris Paddock, the back end of this, you know, Chris Paddock is kind of, he's kind of a small arsenal guy. David Festa is a small arsenal guy. And I don't know that he has the stuff to be great with a small arsenal. Simeon Woods Richardson is really weird. Low velo, strange shapes. Maybe he can get there being unique. But Zebby Matthews is a little bit more conventional in that, you know, throws 95, has five pitches that he throws pretty regularly. The slider and the curve are the best pitches, but like, you know, a 96 stuff plus fastball is still pretty good. The cutter looks pretty good. And I think he can differentiate. We talked about this on the craft last year, that sometimes it seems like the cutter and slider morph together a little bit.
Yeah.
And he is a three breaking ball guy, which is a little bit scary sometimes, because I always think of Shane Green as like the guy who used to have three breaking balls, but did he have three? It's like the, if you have three quarterbacks on your team, do you have any? So
yeah, right,
you
right. know,
sometimes you get to a point where you have too many, but Max Scherzer is the king of having like four or five breaking balls and like having the touch to do each of them.
Yeah.
And that's actually been a real big part of why Max Scherzer had this career. So when I see a guy who I think can separate three different breaking balls and has a good enough fastball and has demonstrated good strikeout rates in the majors and minors, had a 3.78 Sierra last year. I know it's a bad ERA, but that was 37 innings. I think ERA is the worst thing you can look at. And the other worst thing you can look at is home run rate in 37 innings. So he did worse in the things that matter the least.
Yeah. So yeah, I remember way back when Alex Fast did an article for FTN about just kind of stickiness of stats year to year, and it's just always stuck with me. The least sticky, the most the most fluid stat is home run rate.
Yep.
And home run fly ball. So seeing a second percentile,
that's why stuff plus matters so much. In this revamp, we found that stuff plus actually predicts non-normal home run and BABIPs better.
Oh, nice. Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I remember talking about stuff being more about the contact, less than the whiffs. So yeah. If you're a stuffist, then you should have better contact allowed than those who don't. And what I liked when I saw Zebby Matthews initially was he seemed like a refined pitcher, someone with a good array of that fastball, 95, as you mentioned, 16 inches of vert, nothing really special in extension or attack angle, but that's a good foundation and see what the other stuff is. Slider has a lot of whip potential, wasn't so consistent with it, tugged it a lot against right-handers last year for just a 61% strike rate. But it was a 25% swing strike rate, and that's really cool. And the cutter has a 10-inch vertical difference than the slider. So I do think that's enough at the 3 mph difference. It's 2 inches of horizontal. So I think that's a good distinction between them. You can use the cutter as your strike pitch, which you did about 70% strike rate last year. And then against lefties, you do see that changeup and curve show up a little bit. I mean, combined, it's about 20% usage. Not consistent pitches for him. Sub 50% strike, actually just 40% on the curve against lefties. And then that's for the changeup rather. And the curveball was about 6% strike rate, low swing strike, low called strike, which is kind of strange. Normally you just see a curveball at that usage be like, hey, it's 0-0, get me in the zone. And
him to use that pitch more. And maybe it's a lack of feel that he is not doing it, you know?
Yeah.
If he's not getting called strikes on, it means he can't put it in the zone. And that's something I struggle with my son is like, you know, your curveball looks good and the movement is good, but you need to be able to throw like 6 out of 10 in the zone. And you're more at like 3 or 4 out of 10. And
yeah,
it can be useful when you're an 0-2, but like you need to have them swinging in order to get that to use. If you can put it in the zone, you can create swings by putting it in the zone. If Zebby can do that, the curve is the most different. You know, we're talking about the cutter and slider being kind of close to each other in velo and movement. The curve is very different from the rest of his package. And if he has an 80 mile an hour curveball he can put in the zone, now he starts getting called strikes. Now he starts getting swings when he wants them and swings when he and non-swings when he doesn't. You know what I mean? Like he can start playing.
That's a really good call. So yeah. It's 82 even, 81, 82. Which is cool. I think you were mentioning that once you see curves over 80, that's like, that's what you should
Sliders over 85. Those are the magic numbers. And his slider's 87 and his curve's 82.
And I think there's a lot of potential here with Zebby in the next step for this season if he gets an opportunity. 9 starts last year, and I really don't feel like that showcased him. I remember actually writing him as he came up. When I first saw him, I was like, this guy's great. 3 starts, not really strikeout heavy, but looked like a good pitcher, essentially. Just looked like he was working all his things, and all of a sudden, after that amazing 5-inning, 7 strikeout game, it was 900 runs, and it just kind of was not the same. The Twins didn't really let him go third time through, and I think that should change given the variety of his arsenal. So I like Zebby Matthews as well. I think it's a really good call, and I'm not going to add to it. I'm sorry. We got to do things. Just don't make it Chris Paddock, everyone.
We're being too slow.
We're being too slow, and that was my pick. So you know what? He's the only sleeper. I mean, I'm actually going to have Joe Ryan, I think, in my top 15, by the way, like right around there. Home runs are weird, but he gets better every single year, and especially with his fastball. And I just feel like he's a low whip guy with a 3.5 ERA and elite strikeout rate, and will go every 5 days. I'm like, okay. And also has a foundation for more. But yeah, just sleeper,
health
there you go.
I had him like around 150 innings, so that's a little bit for me.
It was a Terry strain that he's fully recovered from, and that's talking to Stephen Lyman. He's like, "That's totally fine." I'm like, "Okay, cool, things good." That sounds good to me.
I strained that once.
Oh, you did? And look at you, amazing. we're gonna go now to the White Sox. Yes, we're gonna talk about them. Is there a guy that you have circled on the White Sox despite the low win chance here?
The caveat is. Maybe not in 10 team leagues at all. And definitely not in 10 team leagues, probably not in 12 team leagues, but in 15 teams, I like two names. I like Davis Martin and Sean Burke.
Yeah. That second one. Absolutely.
Davis Martin throws the Hayden Birdsong kick change, has two good breaking balls. You know, it's a developing arsenal, and he's got every chance he wants in the world. He's going to stick in that rotation. I think Sean Burke will too. Sean Burke has the better fastball of the two, but the poorer secondary stuff. So if you like betting on fastball, Sean Burke is your guy. It's 95 with good shape. And maybe he can push the slider and curve, to be better than they have been so far.
I mean, against righties, the slider for Sean Burke, 29% swing strike rate in that very small sample of 19 innings. That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So there's potential there. The curveball just needs a little bit more refinement. But Sean Burke's so cool. I don't know. It's just like all of a sudden a guy shows up. Like, oh, cool. I have a fastball that I can throw confidently and go upstairs with. I have the intent with it and it works there. That's great. Oh, cool. Here's a really good filthy secondary as well that gets a ton of whiffs. Oh, and here's a curveball that maybe actually can turn into a reliable number 3. I was like, what? 18, where did you come from?
Almost like basically a 19 IVB on the four seam.
Yeah.
You know, at 95. Like, that's pretty good.
It's pretty fun. And also 7 feet of extension.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wonder,
I don't know why Stuff Plus doesn't love it. It's 87. It kind of has like a maybe power curvy movement. Like maybe it should have less movement. Maybe it should be more 0-0 or something.
Well, I'll tell you this. PLV isn't the biggest fan of it either. A 4.97, which is really low for a slider. But the results were really good. And this is what I think about a lot these days is if you throw 95, 96 with extension, it really means that if you throw something else hard that looks like it, you're going to just do so much better. I think about it with Glasnow's slider, for example, right?
Freddy Peralta. I'm seeing some Freddy Peralta in this.
Oh, yeah, that's a good call too.
Major extension. He kind of fiddles with his breaking ball and it's just basically better when it's harder, you know?
Right. And exactly right. You give them less time to adjust from it and to identify that this isn't the fastball. It's a huge deal. So, I mean, it was the solution to the Kodai Senga problem where I'm like, how does this cutter work so well? And it's like, oh, you throw this cutter in the zone with this four seamer and the four seamer comes in so hard. So then they don't have enough time. They have to gear up for the four seamer more aggressively than someone who throws like 91, 92.
That's right.
And that changes everything.
I'm looking at his heat map. He's throwing the slider in the zone.
Yeah.
A lot.
Oh, yeah. a 10% mistake rate with that slider.
You shouldn't be doing that.
Right.
But maybe there's, one thing that doesn't really show up all the way in Stuff Plus is tunneling. I'd hope that it was, but I think now that we took fastball movement out of the model.
Oh, interesting.
Like it's in the model for fastballs. We took it out of the model for secondaries. So we no longer define how good a slider is off of the fastball's movement. And part of that is because everyone has three fastballs. So which fastball you define?
Yeah, right, right, right. Yeah.
But that might remove some fun tunneling effects if you think about it.
Yeah, like, sure, absolutely.
We don't have the fastball movement telling you anything about the slider's quality.
It's what's interesting too is that we can, you know, we shouldn't really be trying to change stuff plus, right? We should be doing is saying, great, this is the stuff plus thing, and then maybe like I want to do this with PLV, and then that will say like, great, but these results are this. So what is it? And then maybe we can say, great, that's because of this over here. But yeah, Davis Martin also, it was interesting. The kick change kind of disappeared a little bit last year from him, and it wasn't as consistent as we wanted it to be. But I remember looking into him a bit, like, oh, this actually could be interesting. It's just such a bad fastball, and he's like made for Cleveland, you know. That's just always what I think of. You have like a good secondary too, and it's like a terrible fastball. I'm like, oh, Cleveland. All right, what's up, buddy? Jonathan Cannon is also an interesting one, only because for like really deep leagues, he's shown the ability to command everything with multiple pitches, right? With a sinker, sweeper, cutter against righties, and then sinker, cutter, changeup, four seamer, even. Even some sweepers against lefties for some reason. And we've seen games where it's just like one inning is just the greatest thing ever. Two innings, greatest thing ever. And then the third inning, it's like, oh gosh, okay, Jonathan. But you realize that, like, that was his first year. And I could see him turning into an actual innings eater for the White Sox across the year. Also, if you're really desperate for a quality start in a deep league, Martin Perez is there. You know, he's done this. Like, he goes on stretches at times where he nails his things. I think he's not very good at all. I'm not touching him in any shallow league, but like they're just gonna be like, yeah, go Perez, have fun, here's a pink ball to play with too, just entertain yourself.
Cannon reminds me a little bit as you know, that kind of Clark Schmidt, Wisniewski.
Yeah,
like he's a sinker slider guy with the sinkers all right, I guess, and he's fiddling around with the cutter and the change and the four seam to try and figure out how to get lefties right out.
I do want to mention there are two prospects, Noah Schultz,
478 slugging against him.
Sorry about that. Noah Schultz, Hagen Smith, those are prospects. Noah Schultz, if he shows up, just add him. That's all you need to know. We don't expect him to be here for a bit. Hagen Smith probably isn't here this year, but he's really good. And I'll always hold my breath for Prelander Baroa becoming a starter. I'll just always just dream because he throws hard with a legit slider and just, no one will let him start.
I took him with Justin Anderson in a 15 team draft and hold in like the 48th round to like,
yeah, okay, there you
get
go.
The closer.
Yeah, right. all right, we're going to talk about the other central and central guys in the AL and NL as we go faster after this break. Hey, speaking of Cleveland, let's talk about the Guardians. Who is your sleeper pick for the Cleveland Guardians in 2025?
It's weird because he broke out last year. No, I'm not going to do him. I like Luis LRTs, but my breakout candidate is Gavin Williams.
Yes, and absolutely.
What you saw from him, and it's again, I hate to be so basic, but you know, he started at 96, and the very last few outings weren't super hopeful. But he generally, over the course of the season, ended closer to 97 on the radar gun with his fastball. He has a good fastball and three good breaking balls. If you count the cutter as a breaking ball, his command is decent. Velo's there. Results in the minors are there. K minus BB in the majors is pretty good. I think that he can take another step with the strikeouts and just figure out how to use all the different parts of his arsenal better. I mean, you just made the joke that, like, you know, being guardian means having good secondaries, not having good fastball. He's the one guardian that could turn that on its head. And
absolutely,
you have this idea that, like, will guardians player development and pitching coaching know what to do with it if they get there?
Well, right. That's actually been the thing that I've been pushing back on a lot, is the idea that the guardians are a pitching factory. Well, their minor league system might be, when they're in the majors, we haven't really seen much growth from their guys. Mm-hmm. And with Gavin, though, he did introduce this cutter last year. It was kind of, was it a slider? Was it a cutter? I love this because, I mean, again, there are things that we learn every single year about different ways of having success and what is just generally good. And Crochet showed it to us. Extension at high velocity with a cutter in the zone as well. Gavin Williams, 7.2 feet of extension at 96, 97 last year with this pitch. And 70% strike rate almost, right? And this cutter isn't quite there yet. You also have to remember they only threw 16 games last year, had a massive delay at the start of the year, had to kind of get his act together to get ready to go by the end of the season. I just think this guy's healthy now, finally can have the second year he was supposed to have, and can actually look to refining this cutter, getting this in the zone at 91, 92. I think there's so much potential in this. He can just pound the zone with both of those two pitches, doesn't need to rely on this low strike rate curveball that he has in the past. Oh, I'm a huge fan of this.
Changeup, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like as a mixed one, not like your, like I've seen this from a couple guys too. The curveball is always just so different and it's just so big that
no one swing at it.
Yeah. No one swings. That just kind of is there. Like Giolito's curveball is a good example to me of where you try to get in the zone as much as you can, but then you eventually move on from it because it's just too big to do anything with it.
Yeah.
You know, batters know what it is. And unless you can get it in the zone all the time, it's not really going to be that great.
That's why the slider's so good. That's why even a guy like Max Fried, who came up with such a great curveball, you know, really took a step forward when he found a slider. Logan Gilbert came up with a great big curveball that sucked when he got to the major leagues. And he was like, what? And then, then he found that little tight slider and now he's throwing a tighter, harder curveball and is better. So the one thing that's weird for me is I'm looking at his map right now and it looks like the slider and cutter are the same thing.
Oh, man. We have it at 91, 92 versus 88, 89.
Yeah, that's not that much of a difference. And the movement's like right on top of each other, right?
Let's see. Oh, gosh. We have two extra inches of horizontal on the slider and not much in the vertical break department.
Right. I mean, so I, that seems hopeful because he's obviously separated the slider from his curveball before. So now you're just asking him to separate a slider from his cutter. And, you know, Seth Lugo says that most of his work in between pitch between starts is just, you know, figuring out how to replicate movement patterns differently.
Right.
He throws nine pitches. It's like, I just spend most of my time just making sure I still throw nine pitches and not like,
four. Right. I've got this. Okay, cool. I mean, yeah, that happened to Matthew Boyd a bit is that he focused so much on the changeup they lost the slider for a moment. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, but yeah, I'm seeing this even more so now. It's just like there's a line. I don't know. There's a river that goes through that defines the cutter and the slider.
Barely. It's like that's almost an algorithm defining the difference. Like if you were watching, you might not be able to tell the difference.
But I mean, whatever that pitch is, if it's coming in at 90, 91, which is what I want, I care more about the velocity of this rather than the extra movement. That works completely if he's able to throw
a little bit better if there's two different ones. But I do like him.
I just need one of them.
You think one?
Just one. Yeah, Garrett Crochet only needs one.
Yeah, well, Garrett Crochet started throwing some other pitches later in the season.
The two seamer, but they kind of abandoned the slower slider that he had at the beginning of the year for that cutter after having that brief adversity for a couple starts, three starts after his first three.
Generally, pitchers are better when they throw more pitches.
I'm with you there. I'm just saying, look, give me one of them and I'm sold. Okay. Just one that's really good.
I mostly sold him. He's not costing that much. And I think he's in that place in drafts right now where he's a little bit like what you're talking about. Will he end up on the end of the season? I don't know. If he's good, yes. If he's not, no. And he's kind of in that little coin flippy kind of part of the rankings where you kind of want to just maybe get the guy with upside. And if he does figure it out, it could be pretty special.
And yeah, Gavin Williams, I really think is that kind of guy. Also, remember, it is the deepest pool I've seen of starting pitchers in any year that I've ever done this. Which means I'm more willing to take chances on that those ceiling guys because I feel more confident that I'll find something on the wire. Mm-hmm. Joey Cantillo is the one that I'm just going to circle a little bit. And I didn't think I would like this guy at all because he throws 92 with a 61% strike rate on that fastball. But guess what? There's going to be there's a theme. He's a lefty with a changeup that's legit at 7.5 feet of extension.
Mm.
That's an... Ooh, he needs to throw more strikes with his changeup. It's a little inconsistent at the moment. A 57% overall strike rate is not what you want to see. Sub 60% against righties. Some barely.
Poor walk rates in the minors too, so he might have back command.
That is absolutely the thing to look out for. Against lefties, he still threw 15% of the time for a 43% strike rate. Oh boy. You can't do that with your changeup, buddy. But the slider is incredible against lefties. I mean, that's what you want to see. Is a lefty that can take down lefties with a slider. And I mean, it's debatable if it's a slider, 83 miles per hour, 82, but 77% strike rate with a 31% swing strike rate last year for Cantillo's slider against lefties. And I see it this way. This is Cleveland. You got the changeup against righties. You got the slider against lefties. And with that kind of extension on your fastball, I hope that he can figure out a way to manipulate a sinker, a four-seamer cutter, whatever it is, just getting strikes before the changeup and the slider to relative batters. That actually seems like a plausible path for Cantillo over time. Is it going to happen right out of the gate? I don't know. I don't even know if he's going to make that rotation because they have enough options at the moment in Cleveland. But Cantillo is certainly someone that when he gets his opportunities, I'm going to be watching closely to see if he's taken any sort of step forward to mask that four-seamer.
Yeah, I like Ciccone, but he has an option left, so he's going to end up in the minors. Next year, he will have no options and will have to be in the major leagues, and he is totally a Guardians pitcher. Not a great fastball, three pretty good secondaries with great command. That's the archetype that I see.
There you go. Now we're going to go to the Royals, and of course, we both love Cole Reagans, and which is amazing because he's amazing. I actually thought I was going to be low on him, and I have him like 8. Okay.
Do you know that no pitcher in baseball lost more velocity on their fastball from the first to second halves than Cole Reagans?
No surprise to me there. Did not stop his effectiveness, fortunately. And I actually talked to him about it. I was like, all right, is this your arm? He goes, actually, it's my lower half. I feel like mechanically I'm not as synced with it as I used to be, which I personally take as fatigue for his first full year.
Fatigue and comes it's in different sometimes ways. Hard. If it is mechanical, it's sometimes hard to affect that during the season because you just...
Right.
You have, you know, guys right now, some of them are throwing 10 to 12 pitches in the bullpen.
Yeah.
Like, how much mechanical changes are you going to do in 12 pitches?
Exactly. Starts? And the fact that he's still doing really well with that lower velocity at 94 with elite horizontal movement on that fastball, one of the better left-handed changeups in the game. And
I've got him.
It's just so good. I love him. But who is the Royals sleeper? And it can't be Chris Bubich because that's mine.
I don't even like Chris Bubich, so.
Oh, well, cool. Great.
I don't have I don't have one on this team.
You don't have a single sleeper on the Royals. I mean, you could argue that Seth Lugo because he's going later than his season went, right?
I mean, he's going pretty late, but I've settled in with Lugo as like a back end top 60 type pitcher. I'm 65 right now. I don't know.
That's about right.
He's part of the yo-yo. You can if you yo-load so too hard, you can yo-yo with him.
Okay. With Bubich, for example, is he going to start? I don't know. I hope he does. He will have lower velocity likely. He was at 93 mostly out of the
he's better
totally
than
out of the pen.
Marsh and Kyle Wright, I think so.
And so you'll see probably like 91, 92 like you used to have. But he's someone with good fastball metrics across the board, good vert, good flat angle, good extension. With a 5.44 PLV last year on that four-seamer. And then you have this changeup that's been developing for a long time. Now it has an 18% overall swing and strike rate. There's things to like there. If it's a lefty with a good fastball and a changeup, all right, that could actually work out. It's a good place to pitch to in Kansas City as well. I'm going to at least be paying attention to Chris Bubich. 12-teamer's not really excited about it, but I would say for your deeper leagues, you're trying to find someone who could be a sneaky impact play. Chris Bubich could be that.
Yeah, I was negative, and I still am for the most part, but there is a little bit of an interesting kind of thing that you can watch out for. So in the first start, he's going to be still his reliever self, and he might even sit 94, 95 and touch 97 or whatever. And or 96, and you know, people might get breathless about that, but that'll be the first one, and he'll be still a reliever. So, in the second one, he'll go 2 innings, 3 innings. So, if he is into his 3 or 4 inning start and he's sitting 93 still, which is possible, because what he may end up doing is, and you saw this with Grant Holmes, even, and some other pitchers, where they just take that, they went into relief, got a little velo bump, and then went back to starting and just kept it and basically said, I know what it's like to throw this hard and I'm just going to throw as hard as long as I can. And they'll take me out when the velo drops. Right.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And I got through 5 innings. Like I don't think he can give you 180 innings of sitting 93 plus.
Cause
he never did that before.
Yeah.
But maybe he could give you 120 to 130 innings of five inning starts, you know, where he's sitting 93 and he's just throwing as hard as he can for the five innings they give him. So if he does that and he sits 93, you know, in that park, yeah, I could see it.
So yeah, definitely pay attention to Bubich, especially in the spring too, just to see if the Royals are really going to push him into that number five. It sounds like they're going to. Maybe they just sign Jose Quintana. Who's going to sign Jose Quintana? This is like the easiest, like, oh, you need some innings. Sorry, just go get Jose Quintana, whatever. It feels like a fit there with Kansas City. It wouldn't be expensive.
But the Angels have used up all their spots on guys like that.
Yeah, right. And then I would even argue that any team that would want to get Nick Pivetta should get Jordan Montgomery instead. It just doesn't make sense to me because then you don't lose a draft pick. It's probably cheaper to get Jordan Montgomery.
I forgot about the draft pick. I mean, I'd rather have the bet as a pitcher, but.
But, like, I think at this point.
More because if you get Jordan Montgomery, you can get them to swallow some of that cash.
Right, absolutely. Let's say you cut it in half or so, right?
Yeah. So if it's like, the question is Jordan Montgomery for $10 million and no draft pick or Nick Pivetta for $20 million? Because he's going to want to recoup that at least.
Yeah, there's no way he's going underneath 20. He's not going to have his tail between
his legs. Plus a draft pick. Now you're making the math a little harder for me.
Exactly. So just something to think about, guys. But we're going to move now to the Tigers. And the Tigers, I mean.
We're going to have like a Rochambeau for who gets Jackson Jobe.
No, he's not a sleeper.
Yeah, he's not a sleeper at this point.
So we can't. We can't do that. I mean, now, especially with Alex Cobb being delayed, it doesn't mean that Cobb isn't going to be ready in April or mid-April, which wouldn't really suggest Jackson Jobe, because I would imagine the Tigers want to bring him up and then keep him there. And if it's just like a two-week thing,
they could Cater Montero it for a little bit.
Right. And he's someone who could appear. And there's so many random guys on the Tigers that could just be starting. Brand Herter had this absurd sinker against lefties last year. It was like the lowest I've ever seen of an ICR. Well,
Risky was like starting slash.
Yeah. Tyler Holton. I mean, they say he won't start, but we'll see. There's also Casey Mize. There's Matt Manning still exists. You know, we'll see what happens there. Is there someone outside of Jobe that you have circled?
Mize, you know, he told me late in the season, we've talked about this a lot on this cast, and I don't need to rehash all of it, but maybe people forgot. He's a good fastball changeup guy that has pushed his slider to places where the metrics say it's all right, 96 stuff plus, average is like 105, so like it's okay. And he's throwing the slider harder and harder. By the end of the season, he's throwing at 89, and I think the stuff metrics are going to like that. If I look at his game log on Fangraphs and look at the stuff plus on the slider, you know, by the end of the season, he was pushing hundreds with it in terms of 100 stuff plus. So the slider, if he just throws it 89, would give him two fastballs, a usable slider, and a good splitter, and maybe even a decent, you know, curveball. So the pieces are all there. He just admitted to me that he doesn't have good touch for like good feel for spin.
Right.
And that is the difference between, you know, making it and flaming out in this game these days. Like I am biased towards guys who have feel for spin and have good breaking balls, because I think you can three breaking ball your way out of any platoon splits much easier than it is for some guys who have good feel for changeups to develop good breaking balls. There's even Grayson Rodriguez, you know, I'm a little worried that he's a changeup first guy and the breaking balls are never going to be good.
He doesn't need it. Like he just needs a cutter. Everyone needs a cutter. You just need a cutter.
But his cutter, when he threw it, got spanked.
Well, he didn't really throw one. It was more of a slider curve. Yeah. I feel like this cutter is, you have to actually embrace it for it to be a real addition.
Anyway, Mize has the pieces theoretically, and so that's what I'm basing my idea on, is that the pieces are all there, and just a tiny bit of improvement on the breaking balls and he could actually just take off. I mean, you have to remember he's like a 1-1.
Well, right, absolutely. Here's something that's fun. Alex Cobb, you were going to be the SP3 out of the gate for the Tigers. That's what the expectation was. You have Tarek Skubal, you have Jack Flaherty, okay. And this might be a benefit for Jackson Jobe and Casey Mize, but it's a negative for Reese Olson, who's been drafted around like 263 is what our lovely rolling chart. If you don't know this, Peel Pro members have this rolling chart of NFBC trending ADP data. Right. And so you can see like up and down, you can just look where it is. And we actually made it so you can do it by position now and move relievers. So you've always been wanting to do that, you know, it's there now. Just ignore Shohei Ohtani, okay? He just doesn't exist. He's on round 263. Essentially, he's like your last two rounds in your 12-teamers. So for the cost of free, and what I generally do in mid-March is I really look back and go, okay, what are these rotations turning into? And who are the first opponents that they have? Because one of my sneaky strategies every year is instead of targeting that SP 4 or 5 that I like but is kind of free, I will instead target an SP 1, 2, or 3 for that opening weekend, see how they do. And if I don't like them, I can pick up the SP 4 or 5 before they've even started.
Especially like if it's like Edward Cabrera, like you know he's going to start for the Marlins at home on the first three games. And if he just poops the bed, you might just be like that. That was enough.
Yeah. And well, this is actually what I did.
Six guys, I'm out.
I did this exact thing for AJ Puck last year. Yeah. I had him on opening day. I hated it. I moved him for Jack Flaherty. Nice. Right. And like that is, you can do that game. So I was so excited about Reese Olson because the first three games are the Dodgers. It's not even at home. The fourth game of the Tigers is in Seattle.
Oh.
So Casey Mize might get that now. And now Reese Olson.
The first three games are in
the Dodgers now. Yeah.
Oh God.
Or maybe they're going to LA instead. I know they're facing the Dodgers, so it's just like nope. So I was gonna tell you it's Reese Olson.
But now maybe you're more into Mize.
I mean, I don't know if I'm into Mize necessarily, but yeah. I still have a little bit worry that there just isn't quite enough in the splitter and the slider. Mm. And the four seamer has to do too much, but I'm very ready to be wrong there. And maybe you want to take a chance on the stream against them against Seattle and to start off the year. That might actually be pretty fun.
We were talking a little bit about what, like whether he could just try to Kevin Gausman it.
Yeah. Oh, but like, can anyone Kevin Gausman it?
Yeah. I don't think he has the feel for the change the same way either for the
split, yeah, that's an absurd splitter. That Gausman has. We're going to talk about the NL teams. We're going to go very quickly because, I'm going to keep it tighter. And we're going to talk about all of that after this break. So I just want to mention with Reese Olson, it's a really good slider, changeup. I like his two-seamer command. I think overall for the year, you want to keep an eye on him, but you shouldn't really out of the gate because it's the Dodgers and you're just going to hate yourself for the first week of the season. And it's not like you have to hold on to Reese Olson at 12-teamer. Just to put that out there. We're going to move, though.
We need to create a name like Toby or whatever for Guardians-type pitchers, like the no fastball. Like there needs to be like a quippy kind of like,
well, I had
he's a Guardian. We could just call him, he's a Guardian. Like Reese Olson's,
yeah, we could just call him. I mean, I used to call him Snuff McStuff Face because they were not fastball-focused. They're just like nasty. Yeah, it's two whiff pitches. So it's like two whiffs. What do you get two smells of? Scratch and sniff?
Oh, there you go. That's not bad.
We'll see. Well, jockstrap
I was thinking of for some reason. Yeah. I mean, I have kids in baseball. So like, you know, like what do I get two sniffs of?
Is like, yeah, right. There's shirts, you know, on the armpit. But no, scratch and sniff, you're like, oh, this is fun. And then you move on, right? Yeah. All right, so let's talk about the Brewers, though. We're going to go to the NL Central now and focus on these NL Central teams. With the Brewers, we did hint at Freddie Peralta before, but not really a sleeper. Is there someone here that you are saying maybe we should give him a little more credit?
Yeah, I really like Nestor Cortez.
Why is that?
He has demonstrated the ability to strike out guys, 25% career strikeout rate in a tough division, in a tough park. And, you know, the velo is a little soft. At times it's been even sub 90 and, you know, and so forth. But last year was 92. I know he had the arm issue, all these things that are negatives about him just make him cheaper. But he has a real good core of fastball, cutter, slider that and with command that I think will actually maybe even thrive. I think he might do better than he did in the AL East. I mean, he's going to be facing like people. He's going to be in St. Louis, you know, he's going to be, there's going to be times where he's going to have more dominant games than we remember, I think, in New York. So I think it's an easier competition. I think it's a good Arsenal. I wish I knew he was healthy for sure, you know, because the kind of the postseason results were a little bit iffy. And so there's obviously questions about him, but for where he goes, I have him squarely in my top 75 as like a useful player with a little bit of upside given his quality of competition.
And Nestor Cortez is at 274. Before he was dealt, it was closer to 400 or so, 450.
Really, maybe people weren't even sure he was in the rotation. Yeah,
right. But now, of course, he is with the Brewers. I like that pick a lot. It is really surprising to look at last year and say, wait, hold on. He made 30 starts for 174 innings and had a 115 whip.
Whip, yeah. Yeah.
That's, I mean, it's hard not to love that. I've always considered Nestor Cortez one of those guys I don't truly understand. I want to say that, okay, cool. 19 inches of vert on the four seamer last year. Is like, well, duh, Nick, that's what it is with a generally flat attack angle. Duh. But then I use the Max Bay app and based on his arm angle, it's like, no, this is actually like dead zone. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What? How? What?
He's kind of over the top ish.
And it's strange. So I wish I had a better answer. There is also a little exposure with the sweeper. I believe he has a big difference. His horizontal release point is so dramatically different when throwing a sweeper. It's 1.7 versus 0.8. And if you guys don't know, really, like, you see like a 10th spot difference or so. Like, you see like 1.4 to 1.6. And 0.8 to 1.7 is just what? Everyone can pick this up, can't they? When it's going to be that sweeper. So it's just strange to me a little. And that anytime you guys are weird, I generally avoid. But I can't deny the fact that this is pretty much the cost of free. He's going to be in that Brewers rotation. They're going to need him to throw innings. Like, yeah, go ahead. This is your, I mean, honestly, this is like your Seth Lugo play of, he's going to get you innings. Like it should be fine. Like, it could work out in that favor. There are a lot of these guys that are going to get the opportunities and they're teetering on that. Are they going to be more or going to be worse? Are they going to just be boring and they can't have that great season?
If he's the fifth starter or even the fourth starter for them, he misses at the Yankees and starts the season off at home against the Royals, which I'll take.
I was just going to look that up. So I appreciate you so much for that.
that was my inner Nick Pollock right there.
Yeah, I was so good. That was, you know, that's like, you got to think about where you're going to be. What's it going to be? What's the actual season going to bring you? When it comes to the Brewers, obviously we've talked about like Jacob Mizorowski at some point. Is he the next Joe Boyle? What is this? He throws really hard and has a 14% cutter that
walk rates.
But he walks so many bats.
Edward Kerberian.
Right. I am going to say the stupid thing right now. Maybe DL Hall has figured it out again. Okay. Maybe he's got to, you know, he's going to get another chance at this. I'm not saying you should draft him. I'm just saying, remember that he exists. You know, sometimes guys go through things and they get, you know what? I see where I did this wrong. He's still young.
I'd be interested to know what his spring velo was. I mean, at one point he was a 96 mile an hour starter.
Right. And then he became a 92 one. And I'm like, well, I'm out.
Yeah.
That was another one. It was AJ Puck and DL Hall I was in on. And I saw the first games and I just dropped them both.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to make those quick decisions with these latest picks. Also, Tobias Myers deserves a little bit of credit. I think he's one of your pitch mix guys. Is this the year of the pitch mix? I'm fine with that, as long as it's not near the splitter. That's all
There's some cool new metrics over at Baseball Prospectus that kind of look at how surprising you can be with your pitch types, how surprising you can be with your movement, and how much velocity spread you have. And Tobias Myers is really surprising with his pitch types. Like some of the surprise factor is like, do they look, it's tunneling, like do they look similar until the decision point? He also has a huge velocity spread. I just did something really stupid, which I don't even want to admit to the BP guys, but I just averaged all of their different ones. I don't know. Like,
look, that's how CSW became a thing. All right. So like, yeah.
And he's like top 50 in the average. You know, some guys who are similar to him are Jordan Montgomery, Grayson Rodriguez, and even Cole Reagans in terms of the spread they have in terms of how much they can surprise and velocity. So,
and the one thing I'm so curious about is if he can harness that changeup. It's a beautiful looking changeup. It really is. And I feel like it would just, if he could just throw this for strikes and not a 46% strike rate.
Wow. Stuff plus is his best pitch.
It's so good. And the thing is, he's young and he has this good arm action for it that would really just be deceptive against a four seamer. And I don't know. I mean, yes, you're right. He's 26. He's not like 22 or so. I'm just thinking 11%.
Yeah. Like if, you know, that suggests that he could ramp that up a little bit.
So I'm curious to see how that's utilized in the year ahead, if it gets any more consistent for Tobias Myers. Moving on to the Cubs. Who you got for the Cubs?
I like Ben Brown, but he might be going to the bullpen, and he probably needs a third pitch, and he was hurt and he's not in the top five. I think maybe Matt Boyd just counts as a sleeper at this point, because
that's mine.
You know, the models never really liked him, but you know, when you have thrown 908 innings in the major leagues, the models mean a lot less. And if you look at him since 2019, he's consistently held a strikeout rate above 25%. And if he strikes out 24 to 25% of the batters he sees this year, he's going to have a mid-3s ERA. And another thing is, it's really hard for righties to hit homers in Wrigley.
Yeah.
Just generally.
That's his biggest weakness.
And that's his, that's one of his biggest weaknesses. So, you know, you could look at the projections and even say, well, what if his home run rates are, you know, more like the 0.91 he showed last year and less like the, you know, 1.5s he used to show.
Right.
And so if Wrigley helps him out that way, it could be a really good season for him. I don't know how many innings he can put together.
Yeah, sure. With Boyd, very quickly, how does he have a 0.91 in Cleveland? I don't know. It's because lefties were the ones benefiting from it. That's right. Of course, when righties, not as much in Cleveland for their home run, like Josh Naylor and everything.
Barrage
like
last year.
Yeah. But Matthew Boyd loved that one. His worst thing is a fastball upstairs. He throws it upstairs and it's not really like a good pitch.
Yeah.
Like 92. And he just throws it upstairs anyway. Which is why you have
the home
run.
Because there are whiffs up there, even for bad pitches.
Well, it's because he's really added this changeup and now has a slider back. And what do you know? He's going from Cleveland, where he was a Guardian. So I think it really is a good fit for him inside of Wrigley that should suppress that home run rate. I'm going to go a little bit deeper. And yes, there's Caleb Killian, who I could see doing things. I don't think he's going to start out of the gate because they probably want to see him healthier for a little bit longer in AAA, but maybe not. We saw him look really good in spring last year before injury, and then he came up and had a wide variety of velocity readings on his fastballs, which was so strange. It was like from like 91 to 97 on like alternate pitches would go back and forth. It was so weird. And I think there's a really nice cutter in there too for Caleb Killian. If he gets a starting gig, I'm very curious about this. I told you. Look at this.
90 to 98.
Yeah.
Two games last year.
What? I did it wrong. Yeah. It's so weird. And I actually, again, I asked Tyler, I was like, all right, what's up here? He goes, yeah, he's just throwing fastballs. I'm like, what? It's not like a sinker though off of it, or no. I'm like, what? How is he acting like Tom Glavine or something? Like,
jeez.
It's very odd. I'm going to be looking out for that a ton in the spring for Caleb Killian. That's one of those ones
where don't listen to what they say. When they report he touched something, it's not going to be as valuable as what he sat.
That's the worst word of this thing. Hit and touched. Oh, it's about sit, guys. Sitting.
It's really useless.
That's the one.
I mean, okay? if they touch something they've never touched before, I guess. Or right. if they touch that's something, that. Sometimes they'll even breathlessly be, he touched 96, and you're like, yo, he sat 95 last year. That is not
good. Yeah, right. That's a really good point, though. But like, if he touches something he's never touched before, then like, okay, that does Maybe. Suggest that there's a lower, a higher foundation. But the real sneaky one is Cody Petit. Okay.
Wow.
Because they don't have much depth. They just lost Javier Assad. It's Ben Brown. And if he doesn't have that third pitch, really, it should be a cutter. I know everyone needs to learn a cutter, but seriously, it's like the most effective strike pitch, save for learning a brand new slider. You don't really need to do too much to manipulate the ball from a four-seamer. If he doesn't have that, Ben Brown, yeah, should be in the pen. So Jordan Wicks exists, and maybe that becomes a thing again. I don't have too much faith in it. Their guys in the wings and for prospects, it's really just Caleb Killian at this point. Cade Horton's still recovering, and they have a couple others, but yeah, that's it. So Cody Petit is here, and Petit is your Will Warren type. He is your command multiple pitch thing that could work for them. He could actually go five innings, maybe six even, just get some outs for them. Like, this is your deep play. I saw him last year when he was pitching for the Yankees. A couple starts was fine. You know, he was able to, he has enough talent here to make this work. It's not sexy, but your deeper leagues, yeah, you could find some innings from Cody Petit.
I'll take Wicks of their group, but I just think he has a wide mix, and I think he has enough breaking ball and changeup. So if I had to pick one of them, it's Wicks. But one thing that seems worth a conversation, and maybe one we can have with Lance on, although maybe he can't be fully honest about it, is what the state of Cubs pitching development is. I mean, they have some wins with Steele and some free agent acquisitions that seem pretty good, but they're like Assad, Wicks, Brown, Killian, you know, even Alzolay, collection of arms that have come up within the organization leave me a little bit cold.
Well, I mean, they just added Tyler Zombro. So I imagine there's going to be a big shift in that a bit.
Suggests that maybe they think internally they could be doing better.
Yeah. I also get a sense that too, that like, save maybe for Tyone and maybe now also Matthew Boyd coming in. Doesn't really seem like the most analytical focused staff, right? Like the conversations between them, not as much, right? Than like other teams that are all like comparing, like the Mariners, you know, they're all kind of comparing back and forth and sharing notes. Didn't really feel like that, at least from out here. And I would imagine actually you have the addition of Boyd, you have the addition of Zombro with Tyone, who I obviously, we both know, is very much in that mindset.
That could be underrated. I mean, like, yeah, people think that Tommy Pham is divisive, but what he does is he gets in among the hitters and starts talking like, what does your prep work look like?
Yeah,
what
right,
are you
right.
Doing? Are you at the top of your game? He can actually be good for a staff in terms of having those conversations.
Speed run here.
Yeah.
Pirate.
Teams we got left.
Three, Pirates. What do you got?
Pirates. I love their pitching prospects, and it's not just Bubba Chandler. I like Thomas Harrington a lot.
Sure,
I
think yeah.
Braxton Ashcraft has a chance. And I like them all better than Johan Oviedo. You know,
Oviedo's so weird, man. He's finally back, at least.
I guess, but like Falter and Oviedo, I think are going to lose their jobs over the course of the season.
Yeah.
To younger, more exciting guys coming up. I found that Harrington for you dynasty types is attainable and easier to get than Chandler or Ashcraft. And it has every bit of the minor league stuff plus numbers that we like. Among the big guys are all, you know, I think appropriately priced, although Jared Jones, I just want him to throw the curve and change more, not because they'll be better for his stuff, but because he gets predictable. He does. We did a show with Trevor May where we looked at the scouting reports and we were like, how would you face Jared Jones? And I was like, I'd look for this and this. And Trevor was like, I'd look for this. And then Cody Bellinger did that. Basically, he used to throw high fastballs on two strike counts.
Right.
You know, and Cody Bellinger looked for a high fastball on a two strike count and pounded it for a homer.
Right.
So if you're a fastball slider, you get predictable. I just want him to throw the curve and change more just to be less predictable.
Right. With Oviedo, slider's amazing. What else is there? And that's the big question we're going to see. He is an extension guy. And so he does have that at least. But yeah, I'm waiting to see that one. I am excited about Chandler. I think that Chandler is, he could be actually the best starter to target in draft of prospect starters more than Jackson Jobe. There's an argument to be made if there's any sort of question about it, if there's still some kind of fighting going on for the positions in Detroit, because as you mentioned, yeah, Falter and Aviedo are the ones in the way, and they're, you know, the other ones are Carson Fulmer and Joey Wentz. So he seems like he has a much clearer path to entering that rotation, and feels like a more polished. He's a very polished pitcher, essentially, Bubba Chandler.
One interesting thing is that though both of them had really high stuff plus in the minors, mm-hmm. there's something strange that happens when you look at Jackson Jobe's player page. You would expect him to strike more guys out.
Right.
There is a weird lack of strikeouts in his minors.
6 feet of extension.
Bubba Chandler does not have that problem. He has 30%+ strikeout rates.
Yeah, right. He's a command guy too, which I really like. He's just very much quote put this year, but there. Mm-hmm. It's not Mitch Keller. He's not a sleeper for me. Then why, you know what my sneaky tongue in cheek sleeper is?
Huh?
Pitching for the Tampa Bay Rays, Bailey Falter. One day. They'll see him. Oh, you're an extension guy from the left side. We'll get you a changeup. Don't worry. We got this. I'm just telling you, it's going to be a pet project for them at some point. The Reds. I'm going to say Nick Martinez as my sleeper pick. Might be yours too, because Nick Martinez really hasn't gotten that full chance to start yet, and it's driving me up the wall. I've been pounding the table for this since he was a Padre. And then last year, they're like, we're going to sign him as a starter. And then they went and got Montas, and they're like, what? Now he's not starting anymore? Like, it was so frustrating. And then he finally got it and soared. His changeup is legitimate. It's really about maneuvering the rest of his arsenal, wide mix.
Oh, you know who he is? Martinez. He's like a Michael Wacha.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. With better vert on his four seamer that he saves for two strike counts, which is kind of cool. I think generally better secondaries around the changeup. But Waka's changeup is still like,
he's
a major leaguer, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's, you know, you see other characters like this. It's like a reverse Lugo, where like Lugo's best pitch is a slider and his curveball, and he's put like eight pitches around it.
Right.
You know, Martinez's best pitch is his changeup, and he's put like eight pitches around it.
Yeah. But it's, I think we saw him embrace it more. I got to chat with him, and it seemed like he was saving it too much. His idea was like, well, I need to get to that. You know, I can't just like throw it. I'm like, no, you can just throw it at them. Just do that. It's so good. And I hope that we do see that for Nick Martinez. Is there someone else on the Reds that you're keying in on?
Well, Nick Lodolo is going in the mid 200s. I see a guy who has two good fastballs, a really good curveball, and an average changeup as a lefty who has inconsistent command, but it doesn't show up in the walk rates, at least. So, you know, maybe somebody who has a 1.3, 1.4 home runs per nine, but I think he'll have a very nice strikeout rate. And if he's healthy, we could see the best season out of him yet. So I'm looking a little bit at 2022 when he had 103 innings, Lodolo did, with a 3.66 ERA. And I'm saying, what if he did that for 150 innings?
Right.
I think that's all possible for him. And it may be one of those things that are like functionally how functional his roster is pretty easy too. Is like, is he healthy?
Yeah.
If he's not, I wouldn't recommend waiting around for him, because it does seem like when he gets injured, it takes long and you're just like, what's the update? Oh, he broke something else while he was out, or, you know,
right. I mean? It's also a rhythm thing for a guy that's a sidewinder, like a slinging lefty, right? You generally want to get into a rhythm and feel good and get in a routine that you're constantly hitting. Look at Sean Manaea even, change his arm angle and was comfortable with it and then wasn't interrupted. Right. So I would be a little hesitant if there was injury, just like you're saying, like, okay, how long is he going to take to get back? And also, is he going to be good when we do see him again? But I love this because, there are a few guys with his kind of strikeout potential later on in drafts. And he just has not had the clear path to routine that a lot of other guys have had. So there's some fun there. Absolutely. Last team. Oh, boy. Best for last. We got the Cardinals. I'll start here with Andre Pallante.
Turn the oof meter up.
Ooh. Yeah, Andre Pallante, I think, is actually sneaky. You want to know my favorite stat about Andre?
Hmm.
His four seamer has more vertical drop than his sinker. Because it's really a cutter and they call it a four seamer, but it's good. It's hard to hit, especially with lefties. It works well with off his slider against righties. He's kind of like one of those discount before striking out guys, Drew Rasmussen, right? Of like cutter, slider, sinker actually puts a sinker in a good spot against
all like 4 miles an hour slower. And
yeah, a little bit slower. I mean, it's not like 90.
Half the strikeouts but, almost.
Well, I said pre strikeout Drew Rasmussen. Okay. But right. That's again, a guy who hasn't really had a lot of innings in the majors so far. Finally got some runway last year, but maybe there's something else there too. And that foundation of having a cutter that's hard to hit that you can throw strikes with a sinker you can place the right-handers, and a high PLV slider does outline at least effective innings throughout the year given regular starts, which, let's be honest, the Cardinals are going to do. I'm going to guess that you're going to turn to a prospect here.
Yeah. I am going to turn to a prospect. And I don't think it's going to be Quinn Matthews. I saw a lot of him around here. It's kind of like a traditional kind of Cardinals, like kind of wide-ish arsenal with command. And I don't think it necessarily has the stuff. The nice thing is he has innings like nobody's had innings. I mean, he threw so many, he threw 135 pitches in one game at Stanford and it became part of the national parlance. So, you know, I do think he has durability. He has command and he has a wide arsenal, but I just do not believe those 30% strikeout rates in the minors. And when he got to AAA, went down to 28 and he really struggled. That might just be ABS, but I just don't believe those strikeout rates at all. And Tink Hentz is my guy.
Yeah.
I think he took good. A real step forward last year. And if I believe one of theirs 30% strikeout, it's weird because Tink Hentz did not have 30% strikeout rates all the way through the minors. And so, you know, a projection system would project him for fewer strikeouts than Quinn, but I would take Tink Hentz's strikeout rate over Quinn Matthews in the major.
Yeah. League. Watching him on video, Tink Hentz just looks so fun. Mm-hmm. And when he gets that change of working down properly, oh, and it might be one of those cases of the shag rug where it's a young man's floor. Like he's going to have volatility when it shows up and it's going to be very frustrating because you can see it and you go, oh man, I'm such a Tink Hentz fan. But then it's like, well, the next game you went five or four innings with four runs and three walks. And you're like, oh, okay, do I hold on to this? Do I not? You're trying to figure that out. But he's certainly a fun pitcher, especially when he's on. Love that pick. But that does the Central. All right. I tried to make it tight by the end. Okay. We could obviously.
I just also generally don't trust Cardinals pitching development yet. I'm with you.
Yeah.
They're working on it.
I mean, didn't they actively make Eric Fede worse last year?
Yeah. They told him to do things that did not, that made him worse.
There were more four seamers that were just bad.
Like, they're like, maybe he has one of the worst four seamers in the game.
Yes, but hey, Sonny Gray's working out there, so all right. That works. Okay.
Sonny Gray's his own man, dude.
Yeah, that's very true. anyway, Eno, thank you so much for joining me on this episode. Very nice of you to be the guest this week. And we're going to do the West Divisions next week. I will also have my top 400 out by next week. So what we'll do is we'll do that next podcast with Sleepers, and we'll have break down our rankings
too.
Yeah. We'll do it. Absolutely.
Boom.
But that is it for today. On behalf of Eno Saris, my name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about the craft again next week.